I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Rabona Podcast. Hello again, and this episode is called The Unscheduled because we weren't planning to do it. I'm joined again by the wonderful Michael and the enigmatic, ever enigmatic producer Ryan. Michael, welcome back.
Hello.
Let's get straight into it. The tale of two semi-finals, England-Croatia first up.
Well, that's not a semi-final we had in mind. it's typical of this crazy tournament that we have two teams that, they had no idea they were going to be at this stage.
Right.
And I'm rooting for England for obvious reasons, but I think England have enough to do it.
Why do you say that? Technically, tactically?
Yes. And I think they're improving as the tournament goes on. They beat Sweden. It wasn't a great game. It was boring, actually. But they're getting better. I don't think Croatia are getting better.
Okay, interesting.
And certain players for England are starting to feel a bit comfortable in Russia. They're comfortable in their own skin. Harry Maguire is one. Who would have thought the whole back three? You know, if you'd said a year ago that we'd have a back three of Stones, Maguire, and Walker.
But isn't this what we always wanted? We always wanted an England team that had this innovative approach. You know, it's a bit Guardiola, actually. You know, who would have put Walker as a centre-back, who would have broken out of the 4-4-2 paradigm? And Southgate's done all of that.
I don't think Walker likes playing there. I think he's on record as saying, I'm doing it for the team. But that's the mentality of this team at the moment. They know that individually on paper, I mean, look at the Belgian team. They don't compare to that or France. And even the individuals that Croatia possess, England have to do, they're pulling together because they know that that's their secret weapon.
But isn't that the key to all the really good teams, though? Sacrifice. Look at Ashley Young. He's a left wing back. He wasn't even a left back a few years ago. He's sacrificed. He's made changes to survive and adapt. Walker has seen something bigger than himself there. I think that's the great thing about this team. They're embracing discomfort.
That's definitely true. I mean, I think also a nod to Southgate for even having the guts to go for a 3-5-2. I mean, in some ways, it's like England couldn't sink any lower at the point when he took over. And it was just like he was the perfect coach for a mood of antipathy towards the national team. But he came in with this 3-5-2. We've mentioned before that he played in that formation when he was with England. But the likes of Kieran Trippier, Ashley Young, and the fullbacks are so crucial to England.
Yes.
They're used to playing in that formation, and they haven't done it so much this season. But I'm thinking two seasons ago when Mauricio Pochettino switched to a 3-5-2 for a little while. The first game he did it was the North London Derby, actually. It ended 1-1, and people thought this is a gamble. But it worked, and he stuck with it for a good 3-4 months. Trippier became really used to that formation. Louis van Gaal was playing that formation for United. Ashley Young was playing his part in that. And I feel that England's key players are comfortable in this system. And that's another another reason why we're seeing the best of them, I think.
I think that's right. He's looked at the skill sets of the players and found a system that works, which is sounds obvious, but it's what you have to do. And it's something that a lot of managers don't necessarily put into practice. I mean, look at Sven-Göran Eriksson.
Well, you could look at pretty much all previous England managers for a long time.
Well, Glenn Hoddle, actually, funny enough, you know, who was sacked for other reasons, but Glenn Hoddle is somebody who I think understood the strengths and weaknesses of England really well. And the thing about 3-5-2 that's wonderful, I think, is that it gives you so much solidity and structure.
Mm.
It allows you to rest in possession. You can flood the midfield. You can sit deep. You can become a back five.
Definitely.
Or you can push up.
And we've seen Harry Kane influence the game by dropping back.
Right.
And Lingard, I think, has been one of the...
he's been tremendous.
He has. He's been great. And he's getting better and better and better. We've seen it for United for a while. We're now seeing it for England. And I think he's approaching those kind of... Okay, superstar would be ridiculous. But he's becoming an elite player.
What strikes me about him, what I said to Finn the other day, is his improvement scares me because this is a player who, a year ago, was not executing in the final third. He really wasn't. He wasn't finishing very well. His one-touch play wasn't the best. And I think Rio Ferdinand said it best, I mentioned before, the ability to play on one touch at high speed as a kind of eight in a midfield is something remarkable. And he has that ability. He has the ability to see the next pass. And I compared him before to Pedro, and I think, you know, I'll stand by that. Pedro was a player who was tremendous as a finisher, but what distinguished him was his ability to see what Leo Messi was going to do first.
Mm.
You know, if you watch the way that Pedro combines with Xavi, there's a 2-0 win that Barca had over Real, one of the Clásicos in the season when they swept everything before them.
Mm.
And the way that Pedro sees what Xavi's about to do, and the same in Champions League final 2011, this understanding of space, which Lingard and Pedro have, that distinguishes them. And what worries me about him now, what worries me, you know, really sort of strikes me, is I didn't think that his peak was as far out of sight as it is.
Yeah.
I can't see his peak now.
This is it.
Right.
This is it. This is what I mean. He's becoming an elite player.
Right.
And the sky's the limit for him, really. I mean, 2015, there was an under-21 European Championship. Gareth Southgate was the manager of that England team as well. And after that tournament, it wasn't a particularly successful tournament for England, but... Southgate said Lingard was our best performer. And I think Lingard's always felt comfortable playing under Southgate.
Right.
And the fact that Mourinho has given him a chance now as well, you know, let's not forget that. Mourinho gets a bit of flack for not playing enough young players, but he has given Lingard more than an opportunity and he's grasped it. And, you know, there was always this thing with Lingard that he was quite a slow developer. Physically, he was small. I mean, he's not the biggest guy. But he works so hard, and he has become stronger as well, by the way. And he covers every, it's a cliche, every blade of grass is covered by him.
Well, he's outstanding on the break. But one thing I love about Lingard as well, having watched him quite closely for a while, is his ability to press is going to be so important, especially with a player like Oxlade injured. You know, to have a player like that can press.
I mean, if you Rakitic and Modric, let's be honest, they're the two players that make Croatia tick. And Lingard's going to have to put in that work again.
Right, for sure.
To stop Rakitic from, you know, they've got to stop Croatia at source. And that means closing down Rakitic. Because if you give Rakitic time, Modric will get the ball and
they'll open you up.
Then you're in trouble.
What I will say, actually, funny enough, is that in the last two games, that axis hasn't been as good as expected. And I think this is the thing, Croatia's going to be very tired.
Yeah,
they've played two very grueling matches.
Physically and mentally as well.
Two shootouts. I mean, Rakitic is... I don't know what is in that man's veins, but it's obviously not blood. it's extraordinary. Those two, you know, two shootout victories, isn't it? And he scored the decisive penalty in each one.
Exactly.
It's extraordinary.
Yeah.
But I just think the amount of mileage Croatia put in this tournament...
Mm. It could catch up with them, especially as England rested most of their players for the Belgian game.
Right.
I think it's so much is on the line for that game for both teams that I think it could be a low scoring game. It could be a bit of an attritional.
I think so. Game. The one thing I was thinking about this, I was thinking, if you look at that England team, they're young, but they've played big matches.
Mm.
You know, Europa League finals, Champions League. They've played big games. This, I know it's a World Cup semi final, but they're not. This is not their first rodeo.
Yeah.
You know? So I think, not that I'm skeptical about the kind of young team narrative. I mean, these players are, they've put in the hours, they put in the time, and they played in elimination matches where there's a lot of pressure. You may not compare the Europa League, you know, qualifiers to that, but Rashford stepped up big time in some of these games. Lingard has scored in huge games, and that's actually his knack, to score in big matches. So I don't think they should be unduly worried.
I do think that Croatia will create chances in this game, and Jordan Pickford has been a revelation. I mean, we watch the Premier League, we know his capabilities, and he went for a big fee to Everton, but it's already looking like a money well spent.
Absolutely, yes, absolutely. One thing I will say about Pickford against Sweden, it's remarkable how much he was tested. You know, he was exposed a fair bit. I don't want to be critical of England too much, but it has to be said, tactically, a poorer goalkeeper would have conceded.
Yeah.
And if you can concede that many chances against Sweden, you may concede more against a Croatia in tune. And it can go either way with Croatia, because Croatia, on one hand, they've had these two grueling matches. On the flip side, there's a sense of invincibility, you know, or sense of destiny. Because twice Rakitic has bailed out Modric. These two obviously love each other, which is beautiful, you know, because Modric is carrying this incredible burden. I compared it the other day to it's like Batman and Robin. You know, Rakitic came along to prominence just at the right time, because Modric, so much is expected, and you can see sometimes the pressure does tell on him. You know, how could it not? The penalty misses, or in off the bar against Russia. And Rakitic just stepped up beautifully, and I just wonder if Croatia will take that passion and momentum into the semi-final and fly out of the traps.
Yeah. I can't believe there's people at Barcelona that are still doubting whether Rakitic is a good player. But yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a close game. I think it's going to be a tough game for both. I'm biased. We're both biased, let's be honest. But I think England will win. And I think Belgium will win the other game.
Well, before we got to Belgium, I want to get back onto Croatia for a moment, because I think we have to give them their place in the sun. And if anyone's listening who wants to know more about Croatian football and the context of everything happening there, the patriotism, the nationalism, so on, there's a great guy to follow, a guy called Dario Brenton. Twitter handle, Dario Brenton. So at Dario, DarioBrentin. Terrific thread a couple of days ago.
Well worth a follow.
A fantastic follow.
Yeah.
But another tweeter who, you know, will be known to this podcast and the listeners, Sid Lowe, commented that Modric looks more like Cruyff every day. I mean, that's a big shout. How do you feel about that?
I'm a Spurs fan. Let's just get that out there. I know his qualities. He's the king of the pre-assists. That's what I always called him. The guy that can spot that killer pass that splits a defence and leads to the opportunity to score. He's an absolutely phenomenal player. I don't want to draw comparisons like that, but I think he's up there with some of the very best we've seen over the last few decades.
What amazes me with Modric is the speed of his ascent, because he's someone who actually had a fairly, not a slow start, but he reached the elite level we expected a bit later. He never had the foil around him. You know, was at Zagreb, obviously. Terrific for Croatia, you know, really sucker punched us in the qualifiers with Eduardo, who was a terrific player, obviously. The great Eduardo.
He was also a Da Silva.
Yeah, so like all great public figures, he was a Da Silva. What I love about Modric is that the Madrid team, I think, was his rightful reward, because he'd been playing that well for absolutely years, but never quite had the surrounding apparatus. So it's great. I mean, I wouldn't compare him to Cruyff only because I believe he deserves his own plinth, his own platform among the greats.
Yeah.
He reminds me more of a kind of, who was the guy at the Finnish player, Jari Litmanen?
Oh, what a player.
And the reason I mentioned Litmanen is because Litmanen was the emblem of his team. He wasn't necessarily an intellectual like Cruyff. He wasn't a sort of a thought leader, but he had this emblematic figure, this iconic sense. And you could imagine, I mean, Litmanen played till he was 40-something. Cruyff could play, Modric.
Freudian slip.
Cruyffian slip. Modric could easily play until his early 40s.
Yeah.
At a decent level.
Litmanen kind of stitched together that Ajax team in 95 in a similar way. I think that's a noble comparison.
And let's get on to the next semi then. Belgium, France. Belgium. Let's get into Belgium.
What a game. What a game it could be.
Right.
I hope it's going to live up to expectations. Belgium, I think, are the strongest team in the tournament.
Who excites you at Belgium? Who are the players that really get it going for you?
Kevin De Bruyne.
How so? The playmaker, the master playmaker himself.
I do love that the shackles have been taken off him. Under Mark Wilmot's Belgium were always this kind of spluttering engine that didn't quite fire as we all know they could. And eventually, you know, he just ran out of time. And the fact that he was criticising his players publicly for their defeats after, well, they lost against Italy in the opening game of the last Euros. Not the easiest game to start with, but Wilmots came out and said that Lukaku wasn't doing this and Alderweireld was at fault for that goal. I mean, it's not going to win you friends in this era of the game that we're in. So it was always clear that Belgium had to find a coach that was going to embrace their top stars and get the best out of them. And the system that Martinez has got...
The systems.
Yeah, right. It's true. He's an incredibly flexible coach. He's a cup coach as well. He's a guy that somehow seems to get his teams up for tournament football in a way that he wasn't able to do when he was manager of Everton, for example.
It's funny because he is a cup manager.
And by the way, I should say Everton in the league. I mean, in the cup, they made the semi-finals of both cup competitions in the season that he was fired.
What I love about him, Martinez, and I have to say this, when I say love is a strong word, but what I love what he's done is the tactical flexibility and bravery to put Lukaku on the flank against Brazil, almost like a Hulk type thing where you've got this technical, fast, powerful player who can counter, lead the counter and end it on the flank to then sort of pen in the fullback and pen in Marcelo, who actually has been unstoppable for most of the last, you know, sort of 2-3 years in that position. I mean, it's not the first time, as a producer Ryan has signaled to me, that he's done that, Martinez putting Lukaku up against a fullback who's very progressive. So I think a 3-0 that Everton had over Arsenal at Goodison Park, where Lukaku basically penned back an on-rushing fullback. And getting him behind Marcelo, I think, was the key to really stopping Brazil building attacks. They did it so well. But can we also talk about Eden Hazard? Because Hazard has just been wonderful. He, again, is playing with freedom. And we've now got these three players, Hazard, Lukaku and De Bruyne, all playing at the peaks we expected.
Just to go back to Lukaku for a second, it's so easy to stick him up front as a number nine and think, okay, right, he's our target man. He's going to feed the balls off to De Bruyne and Hazard. And that can be effective. But the fact that Martinez is a progressive coach, he's seen that Lukaku can be so dangerous in wide areas. And, you know, we saw that against Brazil. We saw that against Japan. And Lukaku's intelligence is something that I would like to see utilised a bit more in the Premier League as well.
I would say that Lukaku is a strange player in that he doesn't do what you immediately expect. He's a big guy. He's a big guy, but he doesn't necessarily use his physical strength. If you look at backing into goal, it's not like Mandzukic actually is more physical than Lukaku. Lukaku also is a very big guy who doesn't score with that much power. Like, a lot of his goals are from close range, but he's also very good at hiding. He's a strange player.
And he also knows what Martinez wants as well. And he said after the victory over Brazil in the quarterfinal that he's been helping the likes of De Bruyne and Hazard that don't have experience of playing in the Martinez system to understand what he wants. So maybe we see these pictures of Lukaku kind of surrounded by the team, giving a team talk. It's become a ritual now.
Yeah.
But I do think Lukaku is playing an incredibly influential role on and off the pitch.
Can I get something else in there? Because you've mentioned leadership, and I think it's an intangible part of these teams.
Yeah.
What leadership are you seeing in the Belgium team? Who do you think is putting it together, apart from Lukaku? Who are the kind of people having those quiet conversations that are making the difference?
You know, this Belgium team have threatened to deliver these kind of performances for a long time. And there's quite a lot of experienced individuals in there. You know, Vertonghen, Alderweireld.
Company.
Fellaini, you could say, too. And it's a team. It's a team full of captains.
Yes.
Team full of leaders.
Yeah. That's a great phrase, actually, a team full of captains. I look around that Belgian side, I just see people that take responsibility.
Yeah.
Chadli counterattacking to score a goal against Japan, the run that he made.
The step
tracking
over.
Everything. Yeah, the step over, absolutely. But to track it.
Yeah.
To see the play unfolding like Chadli did, to come in at fullback, at wing back, a maligned position, and make a contribution there.
Yeah,
you know, Fellaini to come in. I won't talk about him too much because, you know, I don't want to sort of get into discussing United fans too much, players too much in this podcast. But Fellaini coming in and those two back-to-back games, decisive against Japan and remarkable against Brazil.
Yeah.
Because this was, you know, Brazil were arguably the best coach team in the tournament. Mm-hmm. You know, in terms of teams that had match control, Brazil had match control, I think, of pretty much every game they played until they went out.
Well, they ran out of ideas against Belgium because they thought they're, you know, they could just pile forward and their individual talent would shine and they'd be able to unlock them. But they underestimated how solid this Belgian team is.
Can I say something slightly controversial? Maybe Tite, as amazing a tournament as he had a great tournament, I think, despite losing. Maybe he put more faith, slightly more faith in Neymar than Neymar's form deserved. Mm. I don't know if that's fair.
Well, yeah.
Casemiro was injured, yes. But
form still. Because of a long layoff as well, of course.
Right, absolutely.
And it's a shame we weren't able to see the best of Neymar in this World Cup.
I do actually wonder if the kind of diving and rolling around was some kind of subconscious reaction to this isn't going my way and I have to gain some kind of advantage.
Well, it's difficult to feel sympathy for him, though.
The sad thing about Neymar is you have a player who is, you know, he's a photogenic dude. He's funny. He's a joker. He's got unbelievable skill. He's so marketable. He should be as lovable as, you know, any one of those big players. And he's strangely unlovable.
Mm.
And he's made that bed for himself. And as difficult as it is to feel sad for him, I think my kind of reflexive English thing of being sorry for the underdog, and he's weirdly become a bit of an underdog because he's screwed it. Actually, I think he's really damaged himself.
He became unlovable when he moved to PSG, I think.
I think this was the beginning of it. Mm. I think a lot of people respected him for making the move, but the ego, I mean, there was one thing I saw him do in the French League, which really was a bad sign. I think there was a player on the ground, he went over to help him up, and the guy put his hand out, and then Neymar just kind of like withdrew his hand, and the guy sort of sagged back to the ground. Yeah. And I saw that, and I thought to myself, at any level of, if you saw that in Sunday League, people clear the benches.
Yeah.
And the, you know, but one other thing, to get back onto Belgium, they have one of the qualities of all enduring and great teams, which is luck. Yeah. You know, the lucky substitute, not lucky substitutes against Japan, but they needed things to go their way and they did.
Mm.
The header went their way. Vertonghen's, the looping header, Vertonghen's header,
yeah,
went their way. But also, you know, the penalty shout, which went through VAR, Gabriel Jesus, they looked at it and didn't give it.
I think the ball was out of play. I think that's why it wasn't given.
Do you know what I think? Can I be honest with
you? But I have to say, I'm not 100% sure about that.
Can I be honest with you? It looked to me like a clear penalty in isolation.
Yeah.
But I wonder if all the rolling around made people a bit more sceptical. I don't think on a conscious, I don't think they were thinking, oh,
definitely.
Look, I don't think they were thinking, oh my goodness, this is, you know, it's definitely, let's not give them a penalty. Mm. And there was a sense of, when you see the penalty in isolation, to me, it's a clear penalty.
Mm.
But in the context of all the rolling around, I just wonder if Neymar ultimately created some karma.
Mm.
And the strange thing too is that when Coutinho was called upon to score, I think Neymar did a great piece of play and cut in. The one time Neymar needed someone to bail him out, Coutinho couldn't finish. And it was so, I think, poetic in a way. It was like, maybe you don't deserve to be bailed out because you haven't had a tournament that merits that.
Just getting back to the semi-final ahead, Belgium versus France, 23 of the 46 players in those two squads are from African descent.
Unbelievable. I mean, it's wild. I mean,
what do you make of that, Musa?
I think people talk about, when is an African team going to win the World Cup? Look, France and Belgium are not African teams. They're European teams, right? Mm. These are people, Europeans, European-born with African heritage.
Yeah.
What it does speak to is, you know, you've got the footballing brain drain from Africa. And it's such a powerful metaphor for colonial extraction, because that's what's happened here. It's colonial extraction. You know, these players, people can criticize Africa for not winning, but they don't have the infrastructure. They don't have a lot of players that will, the primary teams they play for are countries they're born in. So it's really wonderful. It's great because you've got primarily West African countries that can watch these games and feel a bit more attached and invested to it. And it's wonderful for me as well, because I love to see, like, you know, I say that as a dark-skinned African man living in Europe and working in Europe, there's a difficulty. There's, you know, living here in Berlin, working in Europe, continental Europe, the level of racism or the blatant nature of it is more extreme here.
Mm.
And I do feel that affinity with the players, because I'm like, for them to have experienced this their entire lives and to emerge as they have and be a credit to the countries, I just think is unbelievable. So yeah, I think it's a really exciting sort of local derby for that reason.
Absolutely.
After the break, we are joined by the legendary, the one and only Philippe Auclair. So So we're joined by the wonderful Philippe Auclair. It's a real honour to have him with us, the fantastic football writer who's covering both England and France at this World Cup. Philippe, welcome.
Thank you very much, and lovely to talk to you after all these years.
Long time. Yeah, long time. I've gone grey in the meantime. Philippe, getting straight into it. So France advanced to semi-final. What have you found most surprising about their performance so far?
I don't know if I found anything really surprising. Or perhaps, I mean, if I go into details, I would say perhaps the way that the fullbacks have stood up to the test, which I didn't think was a given. It was one of the big areas where we had concerns before the tournament.
Right.
Because, you know, Mendy was injured. Sidibé is very good going forward, but doesn't provide necessarily the defensive cover we needed. And we thought Pavard is really untested and he's a centre-back. And whereas Hernandez is also very young. And it seems that Deschamps has taken the right decision for that. Very big plus has been Paul Pogba's form throughout the tournament. He's always had this inconstant streak in his performances, be it with club or country. But this time, I think he's really knuckled down. And I don't think we've seen the best of Paul Pogba yet, which is quite encouraging. But we've seen a very good Paul Pogba over a number of games. And that hadn't been the case beforehand.
Right.
I think you would have noticed as well how he's taken the back seat in this World Cup. Yes. And people have often said, oh, it's all about me, it's all about me. And in this one, he's been very happy being in the background.
Yes.
Being, you know, the
facilitator.
Yeah, absolutely. And still having moments of, some fulgurant moments. I don't think he's been as absolute top of his game because he hasn't been tested, perhaps.
Yes.
So there are loads of positive points. N'Golo Kanté, as we know, is
remarkable.
The greatest.
Yeah. Absolutely remarkable, hasn't he?
Indeed. We knew what we were. I mean, there are loads of positives, the way that Mbappé has shown against Argentina and the kind of sense of fun he's given to this team, which lacks it, I think.
Yes.
But,
well, Philippe, it's Michael here. I wanted to ask you a question about that because, I wouldn't really want to ask you about the public opinion towards this France team because, the style of play under Deschamps has been efficient, it's been effective. It's got results, but maybe besides the Argentina game, it hasn't always been that entertaining. Would you agree with that?
I entirely agree with you, and I think it's always been the case. I think he's now managed 81 games at the head of France, which is more than any other manager before him. Mm. But we've still to identify a Deschamps style, which is not, it's all about winning. But that's very much his culture. He's somebody who was shaped by the culture of FC Nantes, which is, to start with, which is a culture of lovely, sleek play, interchange, movement, triangles, and all that. But I think he's completely forgotten about that. And when he went to Italy and basically became an Italian player, an Italian manager, and very much of the Italian school of it's all about the result. And therefore, it means that he's cautious. You will have noticed, I think, like me, how France hesitates to press high up the pitch, just to try to avoid to leave space behind, which they will do again especially against Belgium, because you don't want to expose yourself to those magnificent counterattacks that we've seen.
But how do the French? Would you say the French public see that? I mean, are they forgiving of that because they see results?
I think that they'll become more and more forgiving. And also the thing not to be forgotten about is that at the beginning of the tournament, the people who follow it are the people who follow football. As the team goes deeper in a tournament, the people who start following the team are people who are not into football.
Well, we've definitely seen that with England as well.
Exactly. But that's the same in every nation, I would say. But also don't forget that France doesn't have the footballing culture of England, say, for example. That... Because of that, it's very much about the boys doing well and winning, and it doesn't really matter how. I think public opinion with Deschamps at the moment is still, is a mixture of confidence and not everybody warms to that manager and not everybody warms to that team, which is crazy when you think you're in the semi-finals.
Sorry to be rude and just jump in, because we're at the semi-finals now and we're talking a lot about entertaining France, But I wonder if there's a bit of revisionism, because if you look at 1998, that team wasn't necessarily the most sparkling of teams, if that makes sense. Like, they had a lot they were very stop-start in 98. So I kind of wonder, you know, is it maybe sort of social media slightly putting this pressure on France to be glorious, where actually this is how you win World Cups?
Perhaps, and I think that the parallel you make is completely right, and I was about to make it myself.
That's why I get the big bucks.
He beat you to it.
Because if you remember the criticism that Aimé Jacquet was receiving in 1998, and it was quite fierce, and France's passage to the final was anything but plain sailing.
Brutal, yeah.
It took, it, yeah, it was, it, yeah, it, quite right. The golden goal.
Croatia.
Laurent Blanc, Croatia, with Laurent Blanc being sent off, the penalty shootout against Italy, where you had the so-called senior players, including Deschamps, I think I remember correctly, who were absolutely, I was about to use a very, very rude expression, but they were not feeling very confident on the halfway line and leaving Trezeguet and Henri to do the job for them. So you could see many similarities, but Aimé Jacquet, perhaps the difference is that Aimé Jacquet had a kind of human dimension to him, passion that Deschamps is missing. Deschamps is, his press conferences are genuinely appalling. Well, not appalling. They're so boring. I mean, it's trite. It's lukewarm water. You wonder, he will speak for 20 minutes. You'll wonder, well, what has he said, actually?
It's, is that, you know, almost a Del Bosque thing, though? It's almost a Del Bosque thing of trying to sort of keep you at arm's length. Is that what's happening?
Yeah. But I mean, it's not exactly Oscar Tabarez or Gareth Southgate, basically.
No. he's not quoting Balzac, is he? You know.
yeah. But it's a bit more difficult to relate to that. But I think, you know, as games have gone on, people have got more and more behind the team. And so there is still a level, a degree of frustration. But I think this degree of frustration is more felt by people, perhaps like you and me, who, looking at the players that Deschamps has got with him, would expect a far more positive, proactive style of play. Because from time to time, we do see those, you know, passages of play with four or five first-time passes, which create an overload and then suddenly an acceleration. You think, gosh, this is exciting. This could be a really wonderful team. Maybe we'll see it in the semi-final. I wouldn't bet my house.
Can I say, Philippe, I always think back, I mean, I'm a bit obsessed with this, but the one thing I do love about Deschamps' formation is it's the same one he used, the same configuration he used against France in Euro 2016. In the 5-2 win. And I love that game so much because that, again, had all the elements you described, this incredibly fast succession of one-touch passes, space opening up. And I guess I'm like you, I always pray for the day that comes again. But I just wonder if these games are at such a kind of intensity and there's so little space that we're not going to see that at this stage of the tournament.
His first... His priority, not his first priority, that's redundant. His priority will be not to concede. Yeah. That's the way he thinks about things. So therefore, it won't be a high pressing line. The fact that he's bringing Matuidi back instead of Tolisso is quite a statement of intent. I mean, I'm not saying Matuidi is a bad player or anything like that. I think he's very... is somebody who is willing to sacrifice himself.
Yes.
He's probably a better footballer than what you see on the pitch because precisely of his will to sacrifice himself.
Oh, I love Matuidi. I think he's wonderful. I think he's essential to this team.
Exactly. But I would prefer Tolisso myself. And I love the simplicity of Tolisso's passing. I love the the difficult, simple pass. Tolisso is a master of that.
That's and they love him in Germany. They love him here in Germany, I have to say. They really do.
Absolutely. But it's going to be Matuidi. So we know what to expect. Mm. And also, I think Deschamps will be on his guard because he's going to wonder, guys, what are we going to see in front of us? Because Martinez will play his cards very close to his chest. Is it going to be a 3-4-3? Is it going to be a 4-3-3, as we saw against Brazil? Right. Is it going to be something different? Mm. Meunier is not playing, which is a big loss, by the way. But who is he going to bring in? Is he going to bring Chadli as a wing back, as he did against England? Or is he going to put Alderweireld in the right channel in a 4-4-2 or 4-3-3? Sorry. Or is he going to? And so, therefore, because of that, I think Deschamps will be even more cautious than usual. Right, he will want to first have an idea of how they're setting up. And this he will discover at kickoff, because it's not Thierry Henry who is going to tell him.
Right. well, that's another story entirely. Yeah, yeah.
Musa mentioned the Iceland game there a couple of years ago in the Euros, and it made me think of Dimitri Payet. He was such an important player for France then. How have France moved on in those 2 years, and how have they replaced a player that we thought was so integral to the team back then?
I think that there is a replacement which on the bench with Nabil Fekir. Even if Fekir is perhaps not as much a wide player as Dimitri Payet can be, but he has this element of improvisation. I think he's technically superior to Payet, by the way, which we have been missing from time to time. I say we, accept that we as being purely rhetorical here. Mm-hmm. there was talk about Payet being in the 23, but you will remember that he got injured with Marseille. They were on their way to the Europa League final.
Yeah.
So there we do not have really a replacement for that. If there's one thing you could say, but you could say that of quite a few other teams, we do not have a number 10.
Right.
But you can say the same thing about England, even if you could, you know, argue that perhaps Raheem Sterling is a kind of newfangled kind of number 10.
Right.
Or plays in that kind of space.
More of a second striker.
Modric is not
floating.
A number 10, he's a number 8 operating from deeper. And you carry on and you think, well, where are they? There aren't any. Who is England's best playmaker? It's Harry Kane from a withdrawn position.
Amazing.
So it's a 9.5 because it's generally between a 9 and a 10. But in France, we don't have that. That's not what you would expect of Giroud. So you will rely on Paul Pogba, of course, with this wonderful long passing and this capacity to go past players, both, you know, by dribbling and by also physical presence. But he's not a typical creator either. So we don't have that, which means that we can look quite sluggish.
Yes.
Let's say when we receive the ball and we try to build from the back, and almost invariably something goes wrong in midfield because we don't have... I think Kante could do that kind of thing because I think N'Golo can do anything that he wants as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
For me, he's been the best player at the World Cup since the beginning of the competition. And but that's also one of my problems with Deschamps. I wish I could see N'Golo Kante in the kind of role that we started to see him with Chelsea towards the end of the season, where he was going forward a little bit more.
Right.
And where, you know, he's a wonderful ball carrier. He can ghost past people. He's blessed with acceleration.
Yes.
He's got a lovely eye for the threaded pass. And he also is, you know, so intelligent in his positioning.
He can shoot as well. Everything. He can shoot. Yeah, that's the thing.
He can shoot. Yeah.
He's underrated, actually.
Yeah.
So you wish he could go forward a little bit more, but it's not going to happen because with Matuidi on the left hand side is there for defensive work as much as anything, left or right hand side, by the way.
Yeah.
Pogba will have more of a free role, but doesn't operate really from deep. He's not going to operate in front of the back four. So Kante has to stay there, and I think in a way we limit ourselves by doing that.
Yes.
But you know, there are it's one which I do not know how to call, and I do not know how honestly most people in France know how to call, because we're, to be honest, we're a little bit wary of that Belgian side.
Right. You've seen what they can do.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen what they could do against a top team, probably the best team in the tournament, as Brazil was.
Does it concern you then that the fullbacks in that French team are a little inexperienced, despite having impressed already?
Yes, a little bit. I mean, I think Pavard has been playing well above himself. I mean, I'm really admiring of this young man, who, remember, is a centre back, has played centre back for
Stuttgart,
all through the season.
Plucked,
you know,
from almost nowhere.
Yeah.
And
don't let any Swabians. Sorry for anyone from the Swabian region of this podcast. I do not approve that. I'm not originalist. Sorry. Germans get very touchy about.
Apologise to Mario Gomez. But,
you've got to remember as well that Pavard is the one who is nutmegged by Angel Di Maria in a game which leads to one of the Argentinian goals. in the end. And, you know, France conceded three goals against Argentina.
Yes.
That's an awful lot against a very poor Argentina.
Can we just have a quick shout, actually, for Pavard, the bravery of getting forward, because in the 15 minutes before he scored, Di Maria was running riot. Like, you know, literally had just, you know, Di Maria, he was kind of like such a strange player, had kind of fallen asleep for the first 40 minutes, then really erupted. And then you have Pavard coming in and kind of redeeming himself with this incredible strike, which is still my goal of the tournament, just because of the context, the timing, the manner of it all. It was really wonderful, I think. We're not going to keep you that much longer because we know you are very pushed for time, but I want
That's
to be,
all right.
I want to just throw in a question about Henri, because I feel it's unavoidable at this point. Mm. That's so fascinating how you've got this guy who's like, you know, this the spearhead of the golden generation for France, who is now the spearhead of Belgium's attacking intensity in many ways. And how do you see that dynamic? Isn't that extraordinary?
It is rather extraordinary. And it's creating a lot of debate in France. I would say I was looking at the French press and French blogs and things like that this morning. And all I could see everywhere were pictures of Deschamps and Henri together, and Henri this and Henri that, and people talking on Twitter and Facebook and everywhere about Thierry Henry, to an extent which I find strange, because there's even, I even heard a commentator asking for Thierry Henry to resign temporarily from his position until after the game, which is insane. It's like, would you ask Jose Pekerman to stand down, you know, if Colombia had played against Argentina? I don't think he would have done that somehow. I don't think Ernst Happel would have stood down if the Netherlands had played against Austria or whatever. Yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous. But it's reached that point. But I think it says a lot about the very fraught relationship there is between French football and Thierry Henry.
Right.
It says more about that, I think, than about anything else.
What's behind that?
He's not even the first assistant. He's the second assistant. I mean, it's Graham Jones assistant.
But Philippe, come on, he's there, though. He's in the Belgian. I mean, I'm not going to be. But what's happened there? Because you're someone that's got a good radar, a good inside track on this stuff. That dynamic, you know, there's a lot of teams you could have worked for other than Belgium. Why? What has prompted that? What are the dynamics going on there?
I can tell you exactly what happened. First of all, it's quite complicated, because when Thierry is in this position where he has this contract with Sky going until 2020, right? He lost his coaching position at Arsenal and was looking for ways to carry on his apprenticeship. And he, I think he had talked to Ralf Rangnick, who obviously is, you know, part of the Red Bull group.
Yeah.
And when Rangnick was approached to take over the Belgian selection after Mark Wilmots totally failed at Euro 26, Rangnick said, I would really love to have Thierry Henry as one of my advisors, one of my assistants. Rangnick wasn't kept and wasn't chosen. But the guys at the Belgian Federation thought that would be a great idea, especially if you could get Thierry Henry. And when Roberto Martinez was chosen, he was told, by the way, would you take Thierry? And Roberto said, yeah. It was not his idea at the beginning, but he thought, yes, that would be actually a great thing. He knows my players. He knows many of the, you know, he's got fantastic experience. He's somebody who is a master in the art of analyzing forward play. Yeah, let's have him. And so he took him on, and it was a deal which was done on the yacht of one of the Belgian Federation's Panjandrums, just after the Super Cup in Monaco. And the deal was done, and then Thierry joined as a second assistant. And also because, you know, Belgium would leave him the time to work with Sky. He was not supposed to be there all of the time. He could join them when he could. He wouldn't be paid for his thing. It was basically it's great you're here. Oh, thank you very much for having me sort of things. And then afterwards, of course, Thierry loves to be on the training ground. He loves to show off on the training ground, believe me, still does that. And then, you know, he's obviously quite close to some of the players. He knows these players for having, actually, in some cases, I wouldn't say he's played against them, but he's been close to them for a long time. And therefore, it grew from there. And nobody thought it was a problem until about 48 hours ago. And the thing is that if France had wanted Thierry to be part of the French setup, well, all they had to do was to get in touch with him. It's not that, well, it's difficult to get in touch with because he changes his mobile phone number every 3 months. But you know, there are channels through which you can get access to him.
Yeah.
I'm not. I don't think that him and Deschamps are particularly are bosom friends either. Mm. Noël Le Graët, the president of the president of the French FA, is not exactly somebody who is his closest friend either. Thierry chose quite a while ago. I wouldn't say to turn his back on France. He would never do such a thing. But to live outside of France,
right?
Be it in England or in the United States, Thierry didn't like the way at all that he was supported or not supported after the Hand of Gaul incident against Ireland in 2009.
Right.
There are loads of things which have happened, which means that the links between the French national team and Thierry are not what they should be for somebody who is our record goal scorer and one of the two greats in the history of our football. It's very sad.
And Philip, what will happen if Belgium win? Do you think that relationship will be even more strained?
Yeah, of course. Thierry is somebody who is respected and admired, but not very much liked.
Right.
Whereas Zizou, everybody loves Zizou, or right. Almost everybody loves Zizou. Platini, everybody loves, well, the player, not the administrator. or Giresse, or Thuram, people have got people
right.
love them, or Desailly, or any of the heroes of 1998. People love Emmanuel Petit, and you can carry on like that. Even, you know, N'Golo Kanté, for example, is absolutely adored in France. But Thierry, no, you know, he's a bit aloof.
It's funny because Henri had maybe an aloofness, but Zidane was unknowable. I think there's a slight difference there. That makes sense. And it was easy.
Yes, but Zizou has got this, and I agree with you. I agree with you.
There's a difference.
This inscrutability of Zizou.
Yes.
But Zizou has also got this smile.
Yes, absolutely.
Which is just like, it makes you melt, basically.
He's a charmer.
and he's a charmer, and also he's somebody, who has done so much. He's won,
yes.
He's at the apex of our game. I mean, it's between him and Platini as our greatest ever player.
Right, right, absolutely.
And also, I suppose there is something poetic in Zizou's game, which is, Zizou's game is poetic, Thierry's game is balletic. It's not quite the same.
Ah, yes. This is why we got Filippo Camarabona. This is the best. what a beautiful piece of writing. Philippe, can I just, before we should be wrapping up because obviously we've taken a lot of your time already, but one last thing I do want to ask. In 1998, we had this whole conversation about what this multicultural team meant for French society.
Uh-huh.
2018 now, and you know, politically, things have gone in a very different directions. So it almost feels like maybe that was a false dawn, but we shouldn't have expected more in retrospect.
Mm-hmm.
How are people feeling about the team now? Is it just a good football team and it doesn't mean much to have this multicultural side, or is there something more to it than that?
I don't think we have the same vibe.
Right.
I think you have that vibe with Belgium completely, utterly.
Right.
Brussels is a fabulous place to be in at the moment. Mm. Perhaps as well because the Belgian team is even more diverse.
Right.
And then it was just crazy, actually, when you look at it. It's just amazing.
Yeah. Extraordinary, yeah.
And I don't think that's necessarily the case for France. I mean, I think we've gone past that in a way.
Yes. It does feel like it.
And I think people have gone past, because it's an illusion.
Yeah.
But I would argue that it is a very positive illusion and that you should make the most of it, just like people should make the most of what's happening around the England team at the moment.
Yes,
you should really love it, cherish it, milk it for what it's worth, because it might not be so great afterwards. But at least, you know, have a good time, guys, and may this help, you know, everybody in the future, that it can, if we can achieve it for football, we can achieve it for something else. And that's the thing. And I think I might surprise you, Moussa, but I think this France team is less diverse than the one in 1998.
Yes, actually, yes. I think in terms of the variety, in terms of the range.
You had Djorkaeff, which the Armenian.
We had a Basque as well. We had Lizarazu, my man Lizarazu. Yes, yes.
We had Deschamps is a Basque as well. Don't forget that.
Yes, absolutely.
We had New Caledonia with Christian Carambeu.
Yes.
We had the Italian as well background with Vincent Candela. We had the Breton with Stéphane Guivarche. Mm. It's like, and you had, of course, the African, or Patrick Vieira from Senegal. And you could carry on like that. And you had Zizou, who was a Kabyle from Algeria.
It was like an international flight that last year.
It was incredibly. It's like, wow. Oh, and you also had in 1998, you had the Portuguese huge community in France with Robert Pires. It's not quite the same thing, but it hasn't had the electrifying effect yet that the Black Blamber generation of 98 had. And so maybe things will change if France goes past Belgium past Croatia or England in the final. It's possible. But I think we're more looking at this team as being a football team that a representative of a new France.
Right.
Whereas the Belgians, I think we're looking at the representatives, I think of a new Belgium, but of the true Belgium that I love so much. And we're seeing that Croatia is very much old Croatia.
Yes.
And England is very much a kind of new England that people feel very comfortable about.
Yeah, no, that's and that is encouraging given our political standpoints.
Being here, it's I'm in London at the moment, and I'm just loving the fact that people who in the past would have had some qualms about supporting England genuinely don't have a problem at all. And that when the Conservatives or whoever, actually, or Corbyn, let's not talk about UKIP, try to say, oh, come on, England, everybody goes,
yes, yeah. I like that.
It's our England. It's our England.
Well, Philippe,
let's enjoy it when we can.
Yes, exactly, sure. Exactly. Well, listen, we won't keep you any longer because we were not expecting to have you for so long, the great man, Russia about Russia. But Philippe, I'd just like to say a huge thank you for joining our podcast because, we've done this World Cup series and to have you here is really kind of rounding off really well. And I'm sure Michael feels the same way.
Thanks for joining us, Philippe. It's a pleasure.
Well, thank you very much for having me, guys. And have a good last three games, because the fourth one we don't want to talk about.
And that brings us to the end of another episode of the Rabona podcast. Michael, thank you so much for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you all for listening. Please follow us on social media, Instagram, Facebook and Twitter, the same handle in all three cases, @RabonaMag. Please subscribe to us on iTunes, rate and review if you feel so daring. Please recommend us to a friend, to an enemy, why not, to a family member. And we will be joining you again for one last episode of this World Cup series. Thank you so much for following it, either before or after the final. So please tune in and check us out.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.